Good afternoon. It may please the court. My name is James Manley, attorney number 40327. I represent the appellant, the Tabor Foundation, which brought this suit on behalf of its taxpayer members. There's no dispute that bridges need to be repaired, and it may be that the state of Colorado needs more funding to do that. But this case is not really about repairing bridges. The CBE only is authorized to repair about 5% of Colorado's bridges. Most of the CBE eligible bridges have already been repaired, and the CBE has no plans to repair half of the remaining bridges. What this case is really about is fidelity to the Constitution and the rule of law. Our Constitution requires democratic accountability before taxes and debt can be imposed. All the CBE had to do was ask. If the CBE had simply asked voters to express their collective judgment at the ballot box, this case never would have been filed. The district court's ruling that Tabor does not apply to the CBE's actions is unsupported by law. The bridge surcharge is a tax that requires voter approval because all new taxes require voter approval. And the CBE needs voter approval to issue bonds because it does not operate as a business enterprise. Therefore, the district court's judgment should be reversed and the case remanded for entry of declaratory and injunctive relief, at the very least enjoining the bridge enterprise from collecting the bridge surcharge or issuing bonds, unless and until the voters approve those actions.
Mr. Manley, the distinction between tax and fee is what's required, what we're required to look at, right? We have to decide if it's really a tax as opposed to a fee.
That is the primary question, Your Honor.
And the statute itself that authorizes the CBE specifically says this is a fee.
Certainly, but what this court has said and the Colorado Supreme Court has said is that the label that the legislature applies is not determinative. The court needs to look at the nature and function of the charge. And what the district court looked at here was whether the money was deposited into a special fund. And what the Supreme Court has said in Barber is that doesn't matter. Whether the money goes into the general fund or a special fund is irrelevant to the fee tax distinction. What matters is that a fee finances a particular service utilized by those who must pay the charge, and it's assessed in direct relation to the services provided. And that second part is key. It's not just that the fee funds a particular service. It's a particular service that's utilized by those who are paying it. So a person who does not use the service does not pay the fee.
So is it your position that for this to be a valid fee, only those people who use a bridge should be required to pay the fee?
Yes, that is the most straightforward way of making this a genuine fee, is that people who actually, or vehicles that actually cross these bridges, who actually make use of the service, pay the fee, and that vehicles that don't use the bridges don't.
Let's start with that for just a moment. You said vehicles that use the bridge, but the statute seems to say persons utilizing. Is there a difference?
I think there is, Your Honor, because the fee, the bridge surcharge, is collected on a per vehicle basis. It's not charged per person, it's charged per vehicle. So if it was to be charged as a fee, there would need to be some direct connection between the vehicle and the service provided. In all of the cases where the court has approved a fee, on property in particular, there has been a direct physical connection between the fee being charged and the service being rendered. A city sewer fee, for instance, where the sewer system is physically connected to the property that's being assessed the fee. Or even in Bloom, where the only lots that were charged the fee in Bloom were developed properties that actually fronted the streets that were being repaired with the fee.
Can I follow up on your answer to Judge Casepole's question? You said, if I heard you right, that the most straightforward way to make this a true fee is to toll the individual users, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Is that the only way, though?
What the cases suggest is that there needs to be a physical connection, a direct connection between the properties that are the property that is charged the fee and the service that's provided. So in Enema, the service area where the study was conducted only included those properties that were charged, oh, the only properties charged the fee were in the service area where the study was being conducted. And so there was a direct connection between the property being charged and the service being provided. And the same with Bloom and with the utility fee cases as well.
Well, but given the nature of motor vehicles, isn't the service area the state of Colorado?
That may be true, and that may indicate why this is a tax, because the only benefit that the CBE has identified is just the general benefit of having a safe road system. And that's the sort of generalized benefit that is funded through tax dollars. A school district collects property taxes, and the schools are open to anyone in the district. The benefits accrue in the district and beyond, but those are still property taxes. Even if a property owner sends his child to a public school, that doesn't convert his property tax bill into a school fee bill. Now, on the other hand, if the child were to participate in an after-school activity and pay a fee for that, then that would be a genuine fee because the child paying the fee is receiving the service. Or in the same way that a library district collects property taxes, and the library is open to the public, anyone can use it, the benefits are wide-ranging. But if you want to reserve a room at the library, you pay a fee for that service that you're receiving. But it would be like E-470 sending a yearly toll bill to every vehicle in Colorado because those vehicles might someday in the future use E-470.
You mentioned the ANIMA case, and I want to explore that for a little bit. ANIMA seems to say that if there's a reasonable likelihood that the person's being charged will use the service, that's sufficient. Why doesn't that apply to this case?
In ANIMA, the properties being charged were actually benefiting from the study, and the court points this out in ANIMA that one of the benefits was that the study concluded that those properties alone shouldn't bear the burden of constructing this system. So there is that language in ANIMA, but there's also language in ANIMA that states that the benefit actually accrued to those specific properties. And that's more consistent with the rest of the case law that looks to a direct physical connection between the property being charged and the fee.
Where in Barber do you come with the idea that there has to be a direct physical connection? Because I don't find that language in Barber at all.
Certainly, and Barber is not a case about property fees in the way that the utility cases were. The fees at issue there dealt with services that were provided to the individuals. And the court says this repeatedly, that the purpose of the charges in that case were to fund services actually provided to the people paying the charge. What the bridge surcharge is.
But there's no indication that there has to be a direct physical connection that I can see.
But there is the requirement that the fee utilize a service that is actually provided to the person being charged.
Does it depend on how you define the service? Because as Judge Berger pointed out, if we talk about the entirety of the state of Colorado, certainly people and your clients that live in Grand County are getting the benefit to some extent of bridges that are even in the Front Range because it facilitates the transfer of goods and services from Kansas to Grand Lake, for example, right?
Certainly, in the same way that my clients get the benefit of a robust public education system in the state of Colorado, but that doesn't transform school property taxes into school fees just because a large benefit accrues across the state. That's the sort of generalized benefit that justifies a tax burden. And our dispute here is not with the money. Our dispute is with the constitutional procedure that our Constitution requires, that before taxes are levied, that the voters get a chance to weigh in on that. So the benefits here are.
Are you asking for a refund?
Tabor does require a refund of money collected unlawfully. What we're talking about here is about 5% of CDOT's budget over the time period, the 3 years that we're talking about. And there's also the possibility that the voters could decide that a refund shouldn't issue if the mandate were stayed in this case to give voters an opportunity to weigh in, as the Constitution requires. They could, in a similar fashion as they did with Referendum C, the voters could decide that a refund wouldn't be appropriate in this case. Again, we are talking about a relatively small amount of money compared to the total budget for road maintenance that we're talking about here.
Well, does the constitutionality of this, or whether this is a tax or a fee, depend upon whether all 3,500 bridges in Colorado are in fact being repaired or financed by CBE?
Well, it matters in the sense that there are a great number of people, particularly outside of the Front Range, like the witnesses in this case, who receive no benefits from the CBE because the CBE does not operate anywhere near them. The vehicles that were at issue in this case, it would be unsafe to drive them far enough to come across a CBE bridge. And in 27 counties, Mesa County, Montrose, Moffat County, Cheyenne County, in 27 counties, the CBE does absolutely no work.
But if it did, would that be sufficient?
It would certainly bring this case closer to being a fee.
So it doesn't matter whether all the bridges are programmed or not. You would still have the contention that some vehicles may never cross it because even though they're registered, they're never ever taken off the farm.
That's correct.
Do your clients utilize any goods or services that are generated or manufactured outside of Grand County?
Yes.
So how can you say that your clients don't get an advantage from bridges that aren't going to collapse in terms of the transportation of goods from all over the country?
Well, to Judge Marquez's question, I think the fee is, this bridge surcharge is assessed on a per vehicle basis, and so we have to look at what the benefit is to the property that's being charged. And the generalized benefit of having a transportation network is the same generalized benefit that library districts provide, that school districts provide, that the RTD provides. These are general benefits of living in a civilized society. They are not particularized benefits that justify a fee or have justified a fee in any other case. I'd like to touch on the bonds for just a moment. Because the surcharge is a tax, the CBE does not operate as a business enterprise. But assuming that the surcharge were a fee, the CBE receives grants from CDOT, and it received it in the form of cash and in the form of bridges. And the CBE's witnesses conceded that the statutory definition that purports to exclude those things from TABOR grants does not apply outside of the context of state fiscal year spending and has nothing to do with whether an enterprise is an enterprise.
You said they stipulated to that?
They testified to it.
Is there stipulation binding on us as a question of law? I mean, a witness can't say this is the law and bind a court to agree with that, can it?
No, Your Honor. And I think what's important here is what TABOR requires. And what the Constitution says is that the 10% limit on grants is designed to distinguish between the government on one hand and business enterprises on the other hand. And if the commentators are unanimous on this, including Justice Hobbs, that if the 10% limit applied only to direct cash grants, then the 10% limit would have no substance. And
what case are you referring to that Justice Hobbs authored?
He commented on that in a law review article in the context of water enterprises.
I didn't see that cited in your brief.
It is, Your Honor. It's in the reply brief.
All right.
And what the CBE has yet to acknowledge is that the Attorney General has concluded that grants like the $15 million grant that CDOT directed CBE to receive are grants for TABOR purposes. If the $15 million is not a state grant in this case, then I submit that the universities of the state will lose their enterprise status because the Attorney General's opinion is in direct conflict with the notion that the $15 million are not a grant. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Mark Ruskin. I represent the Colorado Department of Transportation. With me at council table is Megan Rundlett of the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Colorado Bridge Enterprise. There's one case cited by both parties, by the appellee in the answer brief and by the appellant in the reply brief, that goes to the core of what we're looking at today. That's the Luke Miller construction case versus the City and County of Denver. And the reason it's so important, even though it's not amply discussed in the two briefs, is that that case presented an issue of two fees that frankly the parties didn't distinguish between very well in their briefing. I think it's useful for the court in argument to know about this. There was one fee, a facilities development fee, that required a one-time sewer charge to be paid by new customers. And the Supreme Court said that was a reasonable fee to be imposed on new customers to defray the cost of increased treatment capacity attributable to the addition of new customers to the system. In other words, a fee payer got something, an identifiable something for their fee. But there was a second fee, the residential multiple unit dwelling fee, which was a monthly fee calculated at $2.25 per available unit of occupancy, or the commercial industrial rate, whichever was higher, and that's addressed in footnote 2 of the decision. But to be charged that fee, an apartment building owner did not have to have residency in his apartments, did not have to have a toilet that flushed, a shower that worked, a disposal that ran. Simply because he was an apartment building, or because he provided an apartment building, the court said, and I quote, "The minimum fees imposed on apartment buildings constituted a charge for the city's readiness to provide sewage service. Sewer pipes must be maintained regardless of the amount of wastewater flowing through them. And in like manner, bridges must be rebuilt and rehabilitated regardless of the amount of traffic flowing across them. And when those bridges are so dilapidated that they are put in poor condition and meet the criteria of the statute, then they are in fact the bridges that are addressed by this statute. It is important, frankly, to note that the reliance in the reply brief on Barbara versus Ritter omits two critical facts in that case. Number one, it omits the actual holding. On page 250, the court said, in sum, we hold that a charge is a fee and not a tax when the express language of the charges enabling legislation explicitly contemplates that its primary purpose is to defray the cost of services provided to those charged. In other words, the court says, look to the legislature and look to that legislative purpose. But the reply brief also ignores what is particularly important for this court, the seminal case on taxes and fees, Bloom versus City of Fort Collins. And in the Barber case, the court pointed out and quoted directly from Bloom and said, unlike a tax, a special fee is not designed to raise revenues to defray the general expenses of government, but rather the charge imposed upon persons or property for the purpose of defraying the cost of a particular governmental service.
Mr. Case, I think we both have the same question. Let's talk about the language that you just finished quoting that specifically talks about the primary purpose of the charge, financing or defraying the cost of services provided to those who must pay it. Now, your opponent says there's got to be some kind of direct connection, some kind of nexus. And you seem to be saying, based on Luke Miller and perhaps on Bloom, that you don't have to have that at all.
That's correct, Your Honor.
How do you square that language in Barber with your arguments this afternoon?
Well, I would frankly suggest that the language of the holding in Barber is to defray the cost of services provided to those charged. The people who get the advantage from the bridge enterprise fee are those who decide to register their cars. There are people like Ms. Sanders, who testified at trial, who has automobiles that she doesn't register with the state. The condition of vehicle registration, as we point out in the brief, is that you intend to use it or it's capable of use on the state's highways. That is the service that you buy with a vehicle registration fee. Likewise, that is the fee, that is the purpose of obtaining and paying for the bridge safety surcharge, that you are someone who has the capacity to go use that bridge. Now, in Bloom, it's notable that the court said we could actually accept a fee that was imposed on all citizens in Fort Collins or all registered drivers. In Bloom, it's critical to note that the court required no nexus whatsoever between usage of the streets and payment of the fee. You simply had to own or rent property. And to the extent that you could be required to pay the fee, regardless of what the court said is that the fee wasn't conditioned on any act, event, or occurrence. You didn't have to use the streets. You didn't have to have a car. You didn't even have to live in your house in order to have the responsibility to pay a fee for what the court called a network of streets that provided service to all.
How would you analyze Mr. Manley's hypothetical about the E-470 authority sending a bill to every household in the state of Colorado for the construction costs and maintenance costs of E-470?
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that question. The difference between this fee and Mr. Manley's hypothetical is that, take Ms. Sammons, the rancher. She has, I believe, 9 vehicles, 7 of which she registers with the state, 2 of which she doesn't. The decision to register a vehicle with the state is an affirmative act that a vehicle owner takes. And that vehicle owner can decide, I'm not going to use my vehicles on state highways, and therefore not register. The hypothetical that Mr. Manley is talking about is a universal fee that applies regardless of the opportunity and ability and inclination to use a particular facility. And I would suggest to you that that is not a hypothetical that applies to the facts of this case. The only drivers that have to pay the fee are the ones that say, I have a vehicle that I can use on the streets and the roads of Colorado. And therefore, whether or not his hypothetical would also generate a fee that's acceptable, I can't say. But I can say that the facts before this court are very, very different, and therefore not bound by the hypothetical suggested by Mr. Manley. I do believe that the citation and the note by Judge Casebolt of the Anima case is important. There, the court said there didn't have to be a concrete benefit, and in fact, said that the plaintiffs had taken too narrow a view of the benefits involved. I would suggest to you that the plaintiffs in this case have taken exactly the same view. If we get to the point where the use of a bridge is contingent upon a toll, we will only have toll bridges. And that will be a very different scenario. But just like in Luke Miller, you could do that. You could do that. And that would be an acceptable fee in Colorado. But you don't have to do that. Because like the other fee in Luke Miller, you can charge a fee for those who are likely to use a service and who are in a position and who have affirmatively put themselves in a position to use that service.
Suppose the fee were for the entire transportation system of the state of Colorado that was triggered by registering a vehicle. Would that pass muster?
I believe it would, Your Honor, just because if you take a look at the Bloom case and probably Ard versus People, which is the 1919 case cited by both parties in their briefs, that the imposition of a vehicle registration fee in order to maintain a statewide network is exactly what is anticipated by the essence of a fee without it becoming a tax. And so, yes, I actually think that you could impose a fee. And this court noted in the Bruce case, you can take a number of examples of a number of expenditures in state and local government and say, We could finance a lot of things that we currently don't finance through a fee as opposed to a tax, and that's true. But that alone, as the court noted, and Bruce, is reason to decide that this is a tax. The fact that it that might be problematic, and I would come back to the issue of the Justice Hobbs article. Frankly, that was an article, I believe, in the Colorado Liquor. It was not actually an article that Justice Hobbs wrote, I believe, while he was on the court. I think it was 1993. And what he was analyzing was a very particularized situation of a water fee and a water statute and a water enterprise. And so I would suggest that the reference that occurred for the first time in the reply brief is really not relevant to this court's analysis. I would suggest to you that, if anything, there were four words that pretty much summarize why this is a fee. William Wharton ran a vehicle that he didn't drive across a bridge. When asked, do you check bridges to see whether or not they're on the list that the Department of Transportation puts together, problematic bridges, used four words. He said, I assume they're safe. And that's the point. That's why a fee is appropriate, because we don't drive across bridges as in toll bridges with some sort of notation that you're about to drive across a bridge that is in fact on the poor list for the Department of Transportation. People, if they're going to register their vehicles and use those vehicles on the state highways, have a right to make Mr. Wharton's assumption. In any event, Ms. Sammons testified at length about the various people that used her vehicles, and she didn't know where they went. She frankly couldn't say that her vehicles, her ranch vehicles, her neighbors hadn't used them across various bridges, nor had her husband. And so, to that point, it seems to me that this is entirely appropriate for a fee rather than a tax. As to the issue of the CBE's enterprise status, the legislature has spoken about what is and isn't a grant, and it said it has to be cash. And the statute is very clear. And in the reply brief, the appellant suggests that that is simply an advisory and non-binding reference by the legislature. Well, obviously, this court decides that statute is unconstitutional. It is advisory at best. But the claim before you isn't that the statute is unconstitutional. And the cases cited, the Vail Associates case, cited for the proposition that a piece of legislation implementing a constitutional amendment is simply advisory, was in fact a challenge to constitutionality. And I would suggest that the court's finding, or the court's, the district court's notation, that that statute, either statute, would have to be found unconstitutional beyond reasonable doubt is applicable here. And there's no argument that it's unconstitutional, much less that it meets that standard. Nonetheless, the question of whether or not there are appropriate limitations on Colorado Revised Statutes 24-77-101, I think, are errors. It would suggest, if for the first time, the appellant has cited a portion of that statute, 101-2D, which addresses the, and I quote, the purpose of preparing figures in accordance with this article, and links that, and I quote, to ensure compliance with the state fiscal year limit. But that's not everything that the statute talks about. And what is important for this court is that if it were to use that statute as the pivot point for its analysis, it would have to ignore the paragraph that precedes it. The paragraph that precedes it in the statute says the provisions of this article should not be construed to substitute for generally accepted accounting principles, which are applicable to financial documents and reports of state government. And therefore, those standards that the legislature adopted not simply for purposes of state fiscal year spending limits. The balance of the statute, section 105, which deals with emergency taxes, and 106.5, which deals with annual financial reports, and 107, which deals with the limitation of these provisions to the state government, the state rather than local government, suggests that this statute has broader and more important application. I appreciate the court's time. I know that the court takes this as a serious matter, and I appreciate, frankly, that the court has placed this matter high on its agenda for decision.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.